Welcome to the Hillsdale College Online Courses Podcast. I'm Kyle.
And I'm Juan, and we're back with our course on the Genesis story. We're on to lecture number 3 today. The lecture is titled Abraham, Sarah, and Hagar.
So this is the lecture in which Abraham gets into a lot of trouble with his wife, and at a deeper level, and I think why this lecture sticks to me so much, is it has a lot to do with trusting in God's plan, right? And putting our faith into that, and actually having it have an impact on our actions, and actually live our lives in accordance to that plan. And that's a really hard thing to do. And Dr. Jackson drives that point home in a really beautiful scene in this lecture where Hagar is expelled by Abraham. She's out in the wilderness with her son on the point of death. And the angel of the Lord appears and says, I have heard your suffering. Now go suffer.
Yeah, not the thing that we want to hear when we're suffering and asking God to take the suffering away. You started by mentioning God's plan and trusting in it. And it is most difficult to do that in those moments of suffering. And so I think this is a beautiful lecture and a beautiful lesson from Scripture for anybody listening to this course, because we've all experienced suffering and we will all continue to experience suffering. Yet we must continue to trust in God's plan. And that's the reminder that Dr. Jackson is going to share with us today.
I agree, Juan. Dr. Jackson is going to show us how to deal with suffering, pain throughout the book of Genesis. And that story obviously continues into the second book of the Bible, Exodus. And you can go to hillsdale.edu/course and continue to learn with Dr. Jackson, and continue to study the history of the Israelite people and dive into the text of the Bible by taking his course on the Exodus story. I hope you do that you sign up for this free course, continue to learn with us, continue to learn with Dr. Jackson, and you can unlock that course by going to hillsdale.edu/course today. And now for the story of Abraham, Sarah, and Hagar, I pass it over to Dr. Jackson.
Today we'll be taking a look at the Sarah, Hagar, and Abraham episode, and also start working into the Abraham and Isaac episode as well. I think we first have to begin at chapter 15, because much of the Abraham and Sarah story is predicated upon the idea of childbirth. Will he have a male heir? In chapter 15, verse 2, Abraham says to God, O my master, Lord, what can you give me when I am going to my inn childless, and the steward of my household is Damasek Eliezer? And Abraham said, Look, to me you have given no seed, and here a member of my household is to be my heir. And now the word of the Lord came to him, saying, This one will not be your heir, but he who issues from your loins will be your heir. And he took him outside and he said, Look up at the heavens and count the stars, if you can count them. And he said, So shall be your seed. And he trusted in the Lord, and God reckoned it to his merit. I want us to pay attention to one brief moment here. So you see Abraham's desire to have an heir. He's begging God for this. But it's this beautiful moment in verse 2. When Abraham says, I am going to my inn childless, and my steward, and the steward of my household, Damasek Eliezer, is going to be my heir. Notice in the text it says, and Abraham said. It's really interesting with regards to biblical literature. When a character speaks a line, and then the text has the character speaking another line, and Abraham said, what that means is God gave no response to his first question. Abraham asked, Am I going to be without an heir? Is it going to be fulfilled through a line that's not completely my own? So that when Abraham has to speak a second time, God has given him no answer. Abraham is trying to clarify to God what exactly the point is, which means he's really pushing here. Look to me, you have given no seed. And then finally, God responds. So notice, this is an urgent situation for Abraham, and this, of course, is going to take us into chapter 16 and the way in which Abraham and Sarah are going to try to rectify the situation. And here, the biblical prose is stunning in how much information it can give to us in such few lines. Chapter 16, verse 1, Now Sarah, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian slave girl named Hagar. And Sarah said to Abram, Look, pray, the Lord has kept me from bearing children. Pray, come to bed with my slave girl. Perhaps I shall be built up through her. And Abram heeded the voice of Sarah. And Sarah, Abram's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian, her slave girl, after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, and she gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife. And he came to bed with Hagar, and she conceived, and she saw that he had conceived, and her mistress seemed slight in her eyes. And Sarah said to Abram, this outrage against me is because of you. I myself put my slave girl in your embrace, and when she saw she had conceived, I became slight in her eyes. Let the Lord judge between you and me. I want to stop there and just start working through the prose here. All sorts of details. Oftentimes when we read biblical literature, it can seem unnecessarily repetitive. That sometimes this repetition we think is a flaw in its literary quality, but in fact it's one of its features. Through repetition, it's trying to tell us its story. It's trying to highlight what's important there in the text. So in fact, take a look at verse 2. Pray, come to bed with my slave girl. Notice here the issue of relationship is set up pretty quickly. Sarah is the mistress. Hagar, we're told at least one time here in verse 1, her Egyptian slave girl. Perhaps I shall be built up through her. And now it comes here in this next sentence where the prose is exquisite in trying to make sure the reader knows what precisely the relationship is here. And Abram heeded the voice of Sarah. And Sarah, Abram's wife, look at what it's doing here. Sarah, Abram's wife, unless you have forgotten while you're reading this text, it's reminding you again. And Sarah, Abram's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian slave girl. In case you have forgotten, do you see the repetition that's going on here? The text doesn't assume that you've forgotten. It's trying to emphasize what precisely these relationships are. That Sarah is in fact Abram's wife, and Hagar is the Egyptian slave girl after Abraham had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan. And here's the final line, and this is just disastrous. And she gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife. Now, most translations will mistranslate that and call it concubine, but it is in fact wife, Isha. Do you see what's going on here? This is going to prove to be a disaster. The text sets up for us a hierarchy. Sarah, the mistress. Hagar, the Egyptian slave girl. Clearly, there's a distinction. Then the text says, and Abram and Sarah, Abram's wife, creating that distinction still, took Hagar, her Egyptian slave girl, in case you forget what the hierarchy is here. And what happens? She gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife. Now, all of a sudden, what do we notice? Hagar and Sarah are equals. This right here is going to become the language of rivalry. This is going to be where disaster strikes. And now it gets even worse. And he came to bed with Hagar, and she conceived and saw that she had conceived. And her mistress seemed slight in her eyes, because now what has Hagar added to the fact? She's now not just Abram's wife, but now she's a mother. Now she's a mother, and Sarah is not. So you see all of a sudden what's happened here. The hierarchy has been disrupted. This is going to be the language of rivalry, and quite honestly, also a language of violence. Look at in Sarah, she says, let the Lord judge between you and me. And Abram said to Sarah, look, your slave girl is in your hands. Do to her whatever you think right. And this, as a reader, you have to sit back and ask yourself, what is Abram doing here? Is he just relinquishing any responsibility he has to Hagar, the mother of his child? Has he handed everything over to Sarah here? That's certainly an understanding, certainly an acceptable understanding, I think. Then in some ways, he's backed off. Because if you think about it, look, do what you like. What is he going to do if he tries to defend the mother of his child? Can you imagine a relationship where her mistress is now slight in her eyes because Hagar is a mother? And now Abram is going to say, you cannot get rid of the mother of my child? Well, that's not going to end well. So what's he doing here? Is he stepping back? What about this? Here's another possibility. What if Abram is trying to make obvious the relationship that Sarah has with Hagar in this instance? To say, do to her whatever you think is right, puts the responsibility on Sarah. Whatever thing you want to do to your slave girl, be it good or ill, It is on your shoulders. You do what you think is right. And then, of course, he backs off. And then we know exactly what Sarah does. Sarah harassed her, and she fled from her. So we see what happens here. The mother of Abram's child is harassed by Sarah. Sarah wants her out of the house, out of this rivalry, because Sarah seems slight in her eyes. And the Lord's messenger found her by a spring of water. And make note of this. Found her by a spring of water because the next time that Hagar flees, we will also find her by a spring of water. Found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, by the spring on the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, slave girl of Sarah, where have you come and where are you going? So let's just stop there. Notice what the messenger does here. The messenger reasserts what that hierarchy is. Hagar, slave girl of Sarah, lest Sarah seem slight in your eyes, Hagar. There can be some sort of a relationship here, but you have to understand that Sarah is in fact your mistress. And the angel asserts this. Where have you come and where have you come from? Where are you going? And she said, notice she answers immediately. And look what she says. From Sarah, my mistress, I am fleeing. Notice what she's done here. She's reasserted the original hierarchy. And the Lord's messenger said to her, return to your mistress and suffer abuse at her hand. And the Lord's messenger said to her, I will surely multiply your seed and it will be beyond all counting. But notice what's gone on here. The messenger says something to her. Notice their silence. And the messenger has to speak again to her. Why? Because obviously Hagar did not like what the messenger just said. Because what did he say? Return to your mistress and suffer abuse at her hand. What he's saying is, I hear you're suffering, now go and suffer. Return to her. And in some ways, I like to think Hagar, Ishmael will of course be the head of many nations. But here you see a close proximity between Hagar being the mother of one of Abram's children, actually being brought into Israel at this point. In some way marking out this line, return to your mistress, I've heard your suffering, now go and suffer. If you want a line that encapsulates so much of the Tanakh, so much of the Hebrew Bible, that's it right there. I have heard your suffering, now go suffer. And he utters this to Hagar. And he gives her a promise. I will surely multiply your seed. And this is going to be, we're going to see this again and again and again in God's language with Abraham. The multiplication of seed, greater than the heavens, greater than the stars in the heavens, greater than the sands of the desert. And the Lord's messenger said to her, look, you have conceived and will bear a son, and you will call his name Ishmael. And here's the line, for the Lord has heeded your suffering. For the Lord has heeded your suffering. For the Lord has heeded your suffering. Now go back and suffer. And of course, we can now follow where Abraham participates in this ongoing narrative. Because of course, we know it's not only going to be Ishmael, but we are also going to add the introduction of Isaac himself coming from Sarah. And here it is. This is the introduction in chapter 17. So we know Abram has a beloved son, Ishmael, who is going to be the father of countless generations. But now we shift the narrative back to Abraham and Sarah. Chapter 17, verse 15. And God said to Abraham, Sarah, your wife, shall no longer call her name Sarah, for Sarah is her name. And I will bless her, and I will also give you from her a son, and I will bless him, and she shall become nations. Kings of people shall issue from her. Notice more of this promise, right, of generations. And Abraham flung himself on his face, and he laughed, saying to himself, to 100-year-old will a child be born. Will 90-year-old Sarah give birth? Notice he laughed. In the beauty of the story of Isaac, Isaac in Hebrews, Yitzhak, it just means laughter. The rivalry between Sarah and Hagar, the relationship between Sarah and her son, Isaac, and between Sarah and her husband, Abraham, is all predicated on this one image of laughter. That's how subtle this narrative device is here. So he fell on his face and he laughed. And then we ask, why is he laughing? The rabbinic and the Christian traditions see it as a laughter of joy. This is something that Abraham desires. But there's another scholarly addition, a tradition, that wonders if this isn't a laughter of disbelief, perhaps of scorn, or at the very least some sort of skepticism. Is he laughing because he doesn't believe that God can do this thing? And what I want us to do here is not to resolve this issue. I want us to hold these two in tension. I want to ask, is this a laughter of joy? Is this a laughter, at the very least, of skepticism? Let's just hold it up there, because I think the text wants some sort of tension. Our exegetes from our tradition sometimes try to, they've read the text closely. They have various answers to resolve these tensions. But I want us to just sit in it for just a little bit. Verse 18, and Abraham said to God, would that Ishmael might live in your favor. How do we understand that if we're holding the tension? If he is a little skeptical of what can happen, he could say, well, I've already got Ishmael. Why can't we just make him a great nation? Whatever you had plans with this new son, let's just go with that with Ishmael. Again, with that reading of skepticism. But if his is a laughter of joy, he can now say, I have a beloved son, Ishmael. Please don't forget about my beloved elder son, Ishmael. Would that Ishmael might live in your favor. And so now, God, I've got two sons. Please don't forget about Ishmael. Do you see, the reading stands with both of these, the skeptical reading or the reading of joy. And God said, yet Sarah, your wife, is to bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for a seed after him. As for Ishmael, I've heard you. Look, I will bless him and make him fruitful and will multiply him most abundantly. 12 chieftains he shall beget, and I will make him a great nation. So God responds to either the skeptical reading or the one of joy. You're skeptical? Great, don't worry about Ishmael. I know you have him, but I'm going to give you a line through Sarah. If it's the one of joy, I hear you that you have two sons that you love, or you will have two sons that you will love. And don't worry, I won't forget about Ishmael.
Whether you've just started teaching or spent decades in the classroom, you know there's always more to learn. But where do you start? Well, here at Hillsdale College, we have the answer for you. Tried and true. A primer on sound pedagogy by Hillsdale College professor Daniel Copeland. In this little book, you'll read lessons from more than 25 years of Dr. Copeland's classroom experience. It's all distilled into 14 easy-to-read chapters on lesson planning, assignments, and classroom management, and it will help you improve your skills and inspire you as a teacher, one of our most important professions. Whether you've been in front of the classroom for years, or this is your first year, when you read Tried and True, you'll find something to help you keep improving every single day. You don't need to go at it alone. Let Dr. Copeland's real-world experience encourage you and inspire you. You can get your copy today at hillsdale.edu/true. That's hillsdale.edu/true. Thanks for listening.
And so now let's take a look at what happens next whenever it's time to return to Sarah and finish the promise of the blessings to come. Chapter 18, verse 4, when the messengers, that is, the angels, come to visit Abraham and Sarah. And they ask him, chapter 18, verse 10, and they said to him, where is Sarah, your wife? And he said, there in the tent. And he said, I will surely return to you at this very season. And look, a son shall Sarah, your wife, have. And Sarah was listening at the tent flap, which was behind him. And Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in years. Sarah no longer had her woman's flow. And Sarah laughed inwardly, saying, after being shriveled, shall I have pleasure, and my husband is old? And the Lord said to Abraham, why is it that Sarah laughed, saying, shall I really give birth, old as I am? Is anything beyond the Lord? In due time I will return to you, at this very season, and Sarah shall have a son. And Sarah dissembled, saying, I did not laugh, for she was afraid. And he said, yes, you did laugh. Is a response to her response. Now, all sorts of details are coming up again, which mirror Abraham's previous episode with a laugh. Notice how the laughter has come up. She hears she's going to bear a son, and she realizes this is biologically impossible. Sarah no longer had her woman's flow. Abram knows this whenever God told him. Either it's the skeptical reading he had or the joyful one. If it's the skeptical one, how is this biologically possible? If it's the joyful one, it's an expression of great faith in God. But Sarah says she laughed inwardly. And all exegetes see this as a very much a cynical, if not derisive, laugh, saying, after being shriveled shall I have pleasure, and my husband is old. And it's the next question. So almost all exegetes understand, Sarah, this is not a laughter of joy. Her laughter of scorn here will be transformed into a laughter of joy, but here it's scorn, having not been able to give her husband a son for so long. And the Lord said to Abraham, why is it that Sarah laughed, saying, shall I really give birth as old as I am? Is anything beyond the Lord? It's a beautiful question he asked because it plays out perfectly. If this is a skeptical Abraham, then what God has essentially asked is, Abraham, please tell me why Sarah laughed, because you too laughed when I told you 100-year-old Abraham and 90-year-old Sarah will have a son. Why is she laughing, Abraham? Is anything beyond the Lord? He's actually responding. If we take that skeptical reading, he's responding to Abraham's skepticism by using Sarah to say, why would she laugh in such a way? If it's a joyful Abraham, what he's essentially saying is, you're going to have to go to your wife and convince her. She does not believe. Why does she not believe me, Abraham? Is anything beyond the Lord? And saying, please, Abraham, go tell your wife that I am a God of promises. I can make all this stuff come to pass. The joy that you felt, you are going to have to in some way, shape, or form. You're going to have to convince her of this joy that will be there. And so now just think about this for a moment when she says, I didn't laugh. Yes, you did. And whether we have skeptical Abraham there with skeptical Sarah or joyful Abraham there with skeptical Sarah, it doesn't matter because in some way, shape, or form, it takes some act of great faith in God for this to happen. That means if we take the skeptical reading, skeptical Abraham and skeptical Sarah have to look at each other and go, well, this is pretty great. God's going to give us a son. Yes, I wonder how this is going to happen. I wonder in what way he's going to give us a son. 100-year-old and 90-year-old Sarah. Of course, they must now consummate this relationship, the two skeptics that they are, in this joyful moment of, I don't know, maybe this absurd moment of faith. God has said he's going to do this, but we are actually going to have to participate in that promise of the blessing to come. Or else it is, if we take the Abraham is joyful, he has to convince his skeptical wife to participate in his joy and in his faith of God in order for them to have a son, in order for the blessing to come that God has promised them. In some way, shape, or form, they are going to have to overcome some sort of skepticism in some way to make this blessing, to make God's promise come to pass. And of course, they do. And we find them again in chapter 21, verse 1. And the Lord singled out Sarah as he had, and the Lord did for Sarah as he had spoken. And Sarah conceived and bore a son to Abraham in his old age, at the set time that God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son who was born to him, whom Sarah bore him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised Isaac his son when he was 8 days old, as God had charged him. And Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac his son was born to him. And Sarah said, laughter has God made me. Whoever hears will laugh at me. But I want to stop there with this translation I'm using. Perhaps your translation says, whoever hears will laugh with me or will laugh for me. The Hebrew allows for all of those. The translation here seems to imply that Sarah is still skeptical, that in somehow she's this absurd figure. But we can certainly read it that way, but we can also read it, whoever hears will laugh with me. Is this joyful laughter that we can see? Even here, the first line, laughter has God made me. Isaac has God made me. But even here, I want to hold out, is this a laughter of joy? Can it be a laughter of joy? And also the fear of that people will laugh at her, a 90-year-old woman. Look at the next part of her poem. You can see it's this consciousness. It's a thing of beauty, of the miraculous. But the miraculous in this world can look pretty absurd. Who would have uttered to Abraham, Sarah, as suckling sons, for I've borne a son in his old age? This can be a joyful song that she offers up here. Finally being given a son. Finally having this laughter. Or she could be too self-conscious. I personally love the idea that this is laughter of joy, but I also like to keep in the back of my mind that there may be some of that skepticism still there. So we'll let the text continue to bear this tension out. Again, I love to think of this joyful moment for her. And the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast on the day Isaac was weaned. And Sarah saw the son of Hagar the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, laughing. And she said to Abraham, "Drive out this slave girl and her son, for the slave girl's son shall not inherit with my son." And here we see that old rivalry coming back. And notice the key word that jumps out here. If you're reading along with me, what does she see Ishmael do? She sees him laughing. Except there, the Hebrew word is metashak, which means something like mocking or joking. She picks up on something and she realizes, is he mocking us? She could fear that Ishmael's going to inherit too much and wants him out for utilitarian reasons. But it could be something of a protecting of her son, Isaac. She could understand this laugh in its mocking way. It's being hurtful and demands that he be driven out. And notice the next line, and the thing seemed evil in Abraham's eyes. And here it is, because of his son. And here I am assuming he's referring to Ishmael, but of course he has two sons. It could seem evil to him because of his son Ishmael, but it could be seen evil to him because of his son Isaac, whose brother is in fact Ishmael. And God said to Abraham, "Let it not seem evil in your eyes on account of the land, on account of your slave girl. Whatever Sarah says to you, listen to her voice, for through Isaac shall your seed be acclaimed. But the slave girl's son too, I will make a nation, for he is your seed." Notice here that God is taking pains to let Abraham know that his concerns for Ishmael will be taken care of, but that in fact Sarah is in the right here. And notice here there's a parallel structure. Before Abraham allowed Sarah to do whatever she was going to do with Hagar, to drive her out of the house. Now what's God telling Abraham? Listen to her. And fear not. Again, this is a reiteration of this double blessing here. Shall make a great nation of Isaac, but I too shall make a great nation of Ishmael. Have faith in me. Let Sarah cut her loose and have faith in me. These promises will come to pass. Verse 14, and Abraham rose early in the morning and took bread and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar, placing them on her shoulder. And he gave her the child and sent her away, and she went wandering through the wilderness of Beersheba. And this is, you're going to see some parallels in what we look at the next time in Genesis chapter 22 with the binding of Isaac. Here, as he sets Ishmael off on his way, he does so early in the morning. We're going to see the same thing in the Isaac story. He sends her off. And then all of a sudden, what do we see? And when the water and the skin was gone, she flung the child under one of the bushes and went off and sat down at a distance, a bow shot away. For she thought, "Let me not see when the child dies. They're all out of water." She doesn't want to be there, and she does not want to witness the death of her child. And she sat at a distance and raised her voice and wept. And God heard the voice of the lad, and God's messenger called out from the heavens and said to her, "What troubles you, Hagar? Fear not, for God has heard the lad's voice where he is. Rise, lift up the lad and hold him by the hand, for a great nation will I make him." And God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the skin with water and gave to the lad to drink. And God was with the lad, and he grew up and dwelled in the wilderness. I want to work through all sorts of details here in this text that will become really pressing in Genesis chapter 22 with Isaac, because these are the stories of Abraham's two sons, and there are all sorts of similarities here. So the first thing is this fear of the death of the child, and notice it's when the voice weeps and the child cries out. This is when God hears. It reminds me of the moment when Cain murders Abel and God says, "And the blood cries out from the soil to me." God hears those who call on him. He hears those who have faith in him. He hears those that are just lamenting and who are suffering. In fact, that becomes very important. When he tells Hagar previously, return to your mistress and suffer. And he says, his name will be shall be Ishmael, for I have heard your suffering. This is what you have here. God hears that suffering and responds to that suffering. He hears the lad's voice where he is. And notice these lines, rise, lift up the lad and hold him by the hand, for a great nation will I make of him. And God opened her eyes and saw a well of water. Have you ever wondered why we get those two events there in that order? Notice here that it's remaking the promise, reminding of the promise that it will make a great nation. Then all of a sudden she opened her eyes and saw the water. Opened her eyes and now observes that the water is there. Not just simply God makes water appear, but she opens her eyes and sees the water. And why? Because she has a reminder of the promise to come, that he will make a great nation. And guess what cannot happen if the child is dead? They cannot make a great nation. Because Hagar, perhaps out of fear for her child's life, she gives up a little bit of hope in that promise to come, that her son would be a great nation. She's resigned him to death, forgetting about the blessing and the promise to come. But the moment that the angel speaks out and reminds her of that promise, of the blessing to come to make a great nation, that's when her eyes are open. Of course there must be water here. Of course there must be an avenue to life here. Why? Because God has promised that he will become a great nation. He cannot die here in this moment. She cannot lose her son in the wilderness here. It is an impossibility for this to happen by dint of God's great promise to Hagar. And the other promise that we know that goes on here is that God hears her suffering. And because God hears your suffering, does it mean all will be well? No, God hears the suffering and is there to remind you of the promise to come. And as a reminder, as well as the promise to come, is that God hears your suffering. And when we look at this promise of these blessings to come and put it in light of the fear of death and the fear of the death of one's child, we can keep in mind the Isaac story in chapter 22, the Akedah, the binding of Isaac, because we're going to see some of these same images one more time. The fear of the death of a child who's been given a great promise, great blessings to make a great nation. The voice of God coming to the father who fears for the death of his child and yet simultaneously knows of the blessing to come. And of course, that's what we'll look at next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hillsdale Online Courses podcast. If you want to continue learning about the book of Genesis or other topics, please visit hillsdale.edu/course.
There you can find over 40 free online courses, including American Citizenship and Its Decline with Victor Davis Hanson, C.S. Lewis on Christianity, Ancient Christianity, The Rise and Fall of the Roman Republic, and many more. The courses include additional readings, study guides, fully produced videos, and you can chat with your fellow students on a dedicated forum. Upon completing a course, you will also get a certificate. All our courses are free because we believe that a virtuous citizen is the best defense for liberty. So pursue the education necessary for freedom and happiness at hillsdale.edu/course today. That's hillsdale.edu/course. Thanks for listening.